This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Please take a moment and pause this podcast right now and share it with somebody who you would think would enjoy the same topic, whether it's a family member, friend, coworker. I would really appreciate it. Please go to covertnerd.net for all the previous episodes and the different ways that you can get in touch with me. And without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up. Back for another darker and edgier 90s comics. We're going to be talking 90s comics, and we're going to be talking about movies based on 90s comics that haven't been made yet. And I was going through and trying to find some, and man, there's been a lot of TV shows and movies. Obviously, we've been inundated with heroes movies over the years. There's a lot that's been made. I mean, we, for crying out loud, we got a Blue Beetle movie coming.
Yeah. Right?
Who asked for that anyway?
No one.
No one.
Exactly.
Well, I do have, usually we do a guess the artist where Al guesses who the artist is, but we had some technical difficulties on that. But I pulled one up real quick. Al, I got one here. I wanted you to see if you knew who the artist was on that one. I don't know.
Oh, on that one there?
Yeah.
That's me. I did that.
You did that.
It was an homage to Norman Rockwell.
I thought you might know who that was, but I didn't know for sure. So
that's from Lenny Vernon Badass Trucker number 8, also known as the Ocho.
The Ocho.
Which we still have plenty of.
Yeah, by the way.
Yeah. You could buy Ocho of the Ocho, and we'd still have plenty of them.
That's right.
You still have more than an Ocho left. What's on the horizon, Ben and Al, for Lenny Vernon, if you let the listener know?
Go ahead. So, let's see. What do we got going on? What do we got rounded up here? So we're polishing off issue 12 of Lenny Vernon, where he's going to be facing off against the Hellbilly. In that issue 12, we also then introduced our next line, I guess, of books that we're going to try out, which is a spinoff from a character that appeared in the Colty saga. So if anybody remembers Altamont, the biker that helped out Lenny fight off those cute and cuddly Colties, we're going to make a solo run of books featuring him. And so we kind of did a little short story in issue 12 just to kind of play with it. But we actually have pretty much all the work done for his first solo book. We're looking at having one or both of those available probably at OCON here in July.
Oh, nice. Okay. The Lenny Vernon universe is growing.
That's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Are you going to do one with Lenny Vernon and one with other characters, or just kind of whatever hits you on what you're going to pull out?
Yeah, we might focus on Altamont just a touch, just depending on the reception he gets. But then, yeah, we'll probably, if we continue with both of them, it'd probably be like a back and forth type of deal, because I don't think Al can handle drawing two books at the same time.
No.
Nor would I ask him to try to handle that. No.
You can have maybe a panel where Lenny's on a beach somewhere, drinking something, just taking a break, and then it switches back to Altamont.
Right. He's taking his DOT mandated break.
And that's right.
That's when the adventures of Altamont kick in.
Now, is Altamont going to be a truck driver too? He's a biker, though. He's the biker.
Yep, okay. Altamont's the biker.
Oh, good. So I won't have to draw any trucks.
That's right. Or bikes.
Yeah, and technically, he won't have to draw any motorcycles.
There's our plug for Lenny Vernon. And then, do we have any talks in the works, Al or Ben, with Netflix or Hulu about a Lenny Vernon TV show coming?
Well, with the writer's strike right now, it's kind of making that tough, and everything's kind of stalled a bit. So
good point. Good point. Yeah.
Hitting a little bit of a brick wall with that strike, kind of affecting a lot of people at a lot of levels. So
yeah.
Are you too proud to sell your IP to Lenny Vernon, Al?
Oh, no.
If Disney drops $1 million or $10 million on your lap, you're like, no, this is my pride and joy. I'm not giving this up.
I mean, okay. Yes and no. It depends what they're going to do. If they, if they come in and they say, here's $10 million and we're going to be true to the vision, or even $1 million, they're going to be true to the vision and they're going to do everything that I want and knock yourselves out. Fantastic. But if they come in and say, we're going to completely distort the character and it's not going to be anything like what you created and we're basically just buying the name, then probably not.
Maybe, but it comes with a few strings attached before we're going to drop and
sell off Lenny. So,
right.
Okay. But until then, we've got issue 12 coming out and a spinoff coming. That's pretty impressive. I like that. All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, back to TVs and movies. We're going to go through either movies or, excuse me, taking comic book characters or titles that haven't been made yet, or maybe they haven't had a movie or TV show in a long, long time. So it's kind of the concept or the idea here. So I'll kick it off with my first one is the Batman versus Predator that they came out with, Dark Horse came out with back in, I believe it was 91. Yeah. Yeah. Dark Horse Comics back in 1991. It was written by Dave Gibbons and art by Andy and Adam Kubert. I know Al knows their artwork very well. And those guys drew a lot of stuff. And see, their dad was
Joe Kubert.
Joe Kubert. There we go. Gosh, I couldn't even think of his name. Obviously, coming from good stock. I don't keep up on the newest stuff lately. I assume they're still doing work.
They're still around.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So the synopsis is, of course, investigating some gruesome murders in Gotham. Batman realizes that the crimes aren't being done by the Joker or somebody else. It's coming from a Predator. So obviously he has to confront the Predator and stop him. And it's just a good, good comic. Obviously the Predator is based on a movie from 1987 with Arnold Schwarzenegger and company. The handshake or Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger arm wrestle. So
that's right.
That's when Al and Ben, that's what your biceps look like, right?
Yep.
Spot on. So
that's it.
I don't know if you guys knew this, but the Predator blood that they made in the movie was made on set with a mixture of liquid from glow sticks and KY jelly. So, you know, multi-purpose use there, I guess.
Yeah, I was always under the impression that whatever it was inside glow sticks was terribly dangerous.
Yeah.
You'd probably be cracking into that.
You wouldn't think so. And then you're like, hey, let's go get some KY jelly and mix them together. And there's our blood.
Yeah. Yeah, the process of elimination sounds like it would have been fun on that.
Yeah. The Rebel Camp, if you remember in the movie, is actually, it's in Mexico. That's where they filmed it. Is a tourist attraction now. So you can go see the Rebel base from Predator in Mexico.
See where the guy stuck around?
Yeah, that probably is there. There's probably a little circle there on the wall. Right? This is where Schwarzenegger's knife went. Let's see, Batman, of course, DC Comics, 1939. And Bruce Wayne, I didn't know this either. So Bruce Wayne's name came from Scotland, and then Mad Anthony Wayne was a American Revolution hero. So that's where the name Bruce Wayne came from, which is really weird. And then Andy Warhol, I didn't know this either. It was on the internet, so I don't know if it's true, but Andy Warhol directed the first ever Batman movie titled Batman Dracula in 1964. It was made without the consent of DC Comics, so the only thing that's left is a few still images from it. So would you go see an Andy Warhol Batman movie?
No.
No.
No. I mean, knowing Andy Warhol, he probably just used a bunch of footage from other people's movies and then just called it his own.
Speaking of Batman movies, then, I guess, what are your favorite Batman movies? We've had, what, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? I think at least 8 now.
It's been a lot.
Not counting the 60s Batmans, if you want to count those. I've only seen snippets of those.
My favorite, I mean, The Dark Knight, the second of the Nolan trilogy.
Yes.
The Joker. Solid. Heath Ledger was, you know, obviously he was fantastic.
Yes, that's my favorite too. By far. Best. Some people don't like it, but I don't see why. I mean, Heath Ledger as the Joker was spot on.
Yeah. No, that was, I really enjoyed that. I didn't care for the third one. The Batman Begins was pretty good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was good because it was the first time we'd seen Batman since 1989. So, of course, 1989 Batman always has a nostalgic place for me. I don't think it's the best one, but it's, you know.
In 1989, it was amazing.
It was amazing. Exactly.
Our 12-year-old brains couldn't handle that because we never had any of that because we didn't have the riches of comic book movies that we have now, but looking back on that movie now, like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still, obviously I'm biased because I'm like, okay, this is kind of the Batman when I was a kid, so I like it, but, you know, I don't probably give it a fair shake compared to somebody that's never seen it.
Yeah. Ben, of course, his favorite is Batman and Robin with George Clooney.
Oh, bat nipples?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you don't have nipples on the bat suit, why are you even making a movie? That's all I'm going to say.
What's your favorite Batman movie, Ben?
Ooh, that's a good one. Despite what Al says, I think 89 Batman is good enough for me.
Yeah.
Followed closely, I liked Batman Begins, but I really am not a huge fan of the rest of that series.
Okay.
But I like that they took still his origin story, but, you know, went a slightly different route with it in the Batman Begins. I like the storyline that they followed there. So
okay.
I think those two are probably tied for my favorite Batman movie.
I just thought that the Nolan ones were the best, in my opinion. The new one is okay, the Batman, but it just, I don't know, just didn't jive with me very well. I don't know why. But anyway, the Batman versus Predator comic book, I think if they did either a movie or, I don't think you need to do a TV show. The artwork on this stuff, I mean, the covers on these are just outstanding. If you did a movie, maybe two of them, I don't think you'd need more than two, maybe three, I guess you could drag it out. But I think two, a part one and part two, or a really long, maybe 2.5 hour movie would be fine. And then just take the comic book and do it page by page. I don't think you really need to do anything extra.
Well, you would, though. You'd have to, of course, start the movie because it's a Batman movie with the Predator killing Batman's parents.
Right. Okay. Alternate timeline.
Right. If Batman is on screen, you have to show his parents dying in an alley after watching a theater show. That's like in a contract somewhere.
Oh, you know, we'll probably talk about this later, but what type of backstory would you need for this? Do we need to educate maybe new viewers on Batman or Predator? Or do you just say, look, we're going to put this out there. The people that are going to go to this know one or the other or both characters.
Yeah. The original Predator didn't have a backstory in the 87 movie. You didn't even have a backstory on Schwarzenegger and his commandos. They were just a bunch of, you know, bad mofos who are out of the
mess.
And then this alien guy is hunting them. That's it. That's all you needed to know.
Yeah. I think the only backstory we got on the Predator was the ship going to Earth. That was, you know, an 8-second sequence.
Yeah.
Right.
In this, the Predator just happens to be in Gotham City. Batman stumbles across some like grisly murders where people's spines are ripped out. And then him and the hunter start, or the Predator start hunting each other. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could open it just like the original Predator where you show the ship coming down. And like you said, he just lands in Gotham instead of in Columbia.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, you don't need 45 minutes watching the Predator train to become a Predator. You don't need that.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you'll have to have maybe a sequence where he's getting his weapons ready, but that's just kind of standard for these movies.
That's obligatory, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Sharpening the spears and whatnot.
So what do you think? Do you think one movie, two movies?
I think you could get away with one two-hour movie, and it would be a hoot.
Okay.
Again, but you have to get rid of all of the nonsense and just say, look, here's Batman, here's the Predator. That's it.
Right.
I was thinking if we went two movies, the first one would end with Batman at the hospital, or at Wayne Manor, all hooked up to the if you remember in the comic book, Alfred has to help him and kind of recuperate him and stuff like that. But
I see you could make it two movies where Batman gets it handed to him in the first one, and then the second one he comes back and wins, because obviously it's Batman, you can't let Batman lose. So
exactly.
What about the Predator fans? The Predator fans don't want Batman to win.
The Predator is a villain. He's gonna lose.
You could have alternate endings. There you go.
or they're fighting each other, but then at the end, a third character introduces themselves, and Batman and the Predator have to team up, and they fight the aliens.
Or at the end, Batman has wrangled Predator's spear from him. Predator's down for the count. He's got the spear over his head. Predator goes to type in his self-destruct on his wrist, But as he's doing it, Batman notices he types in the password, and the password is Martha.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, how do you know that name? And then they become friends.
There you go.
Well, there is, Al, you mentioned the Predators. There is a fan-made film. I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube. It came out about 10 years ago with Batman versus Predator versus Joker. So check that out. I'll put that in the show notes. Batman versus
Joker. Interesting.
But yeah. I think it'd be, this would make a good movie, or a movie trilogy or duology, or even two and a half hour movie, like Al said, and you should be fine. Now, the thing is, I don't know that this will ever get made, because obviously Disney owns the Predator now, and DC Comics, of course, owns Batman. So I don't know that you'll ever see that, but never say never. I mean, like Al said, if Disney hands me enough money, they can have Lenny Vernon. So, all right. So we'll stick with Ben Crane. The value on these comics, let's see, came out $91.95 for the Batman versus Predator. It's worth $4 now.
Ooh.
So double the money on that one.
There you go.
These alternate painted cover, which is the, let's see, there's a B version, a C version. Yeah, so you could buy them, one with the Predator on one side and one with Batman on the other. Those were $5 when they came out, worth $10, so double the money again. I mentioned this last time we talked about Batman versus Predator and some other episodes. They're never going to reprint these again, because you've got way, way too many hands in the pot on this. Because if you're going to reprint these, you have to get permission from Dark Horse Comics, DC Comics, Fox Studios, and now Disney. To all agree to reprint these.
Yeah.
Right. So that's never going to happen.
So not only is it going to be difficult to do the movie, but to get these reprinted, they did a reprint in 2004 and that was it. So Ben Crane, you need to advise your customers that these are long-term worthwhile investments.
And look, all Lee did there was introduce scarcity and rarity to the market, which only increases prices. So, and as he was talking, I realized that a lot of the marketing strategy for my investment scheme here is in phrasing. You don't say, hey, this, you bought it back in the day for $2. Now it's only worth $4. No. You say, these books have doubled in value since their initial printing.
That's it.
Oh, it, Ben.
I'm not going to tell you that it was printed 30 years ago and it took 30 years for it to double in price from $2 to $4. But this is an investment, because it's doubled in value since its initial printing. And it's only going to go up, because as Lee pointed out, they're never getting reprinted again.
They're never going to do this again. And Ben, it's not a scheme. It's an opportunity.
Right. I got to work on that phrasing.
Yeah. It's opportunity. But yeah. Seriously, though, they're not probably ever going to reprint these again. So if you do have these, it's, you better keep a good eye on it, because obviously they've only doubled in value. So I don't know how many are out there, but anyway, it's a good comic. You can get the trade paperback for, I think I saw on Amazon for $8 or $9, I think. So get them all put together. But I think this would make a great movie. So
yeah.
Definitely.
They're sitting on a gold mine here, Ben. Come on.
That's right.
All right. Who wants
to? They just can't see it.
They just can't see the money right in front of them. Get some suits in front of this. And obviously they wouldn't have to get Dark Horse permission. So it would just be DC and Disney ultimately would have to get together on something like this. And they're looking for content. Right. So I don't know if they can work out a deal or not, but I suppose you'd have to get a lot of creative people to agree on a lot of things, and who would be Batman. And that's a good question for you guys. Who would you want to be Batman? If they did this, who would you want to be Batman? Because we got Ben Affleck, of course, out there now. We've got the guy that did the recent one. I'm not a big fan of him, but I guess
Robert Pattinson. I think he was fine for the Batman movie that he was in. He was, it was more of a almost like a year one story. He was good. Personally, I did enjoy Ben Affleck as Batman, even though I wasn't necessarily a fan of the movies that he was Batman in.
Yeah. I thought he was fine.
He did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like the Christian Bale version of him, just because he's kind of the, when he's Bruce Wayne, he's the womanizer, the alcoholic, kind of just disinterested right. Bruce Wayne. I kind of like that Bruce Wayne type, where he's just kind of disinterested in the playboy, so that nobody would think he would be the Batman. That's the whole kind of the bumbling nerd for Superman, you know, Clark Kent, that this right. guy couldn't be Superman. Yeah. I'd be okay with Ben Affleck if they did this. So, all right. Who wants to go next?
Ben does.
Sure. Why not?
All right. What do you got for us, Ben?
So I landed on this character because at first he didn't fit our criteria, but then as I did some more research, he totally fits our criteria and then some, because we're dealing with 90s stuff. So I picked Lobo to have, in my opinion, either a miniseries like TV series or a TV series, not a full movie. But originally when I started researching him, he came out in 1983. His first appearance was in Omega Men number 3 in 1983. And he was supposed to just be a straight up bad guy for that book. And so I was like, well, crap, 1983, that's not the 90s. I can't use him. So I kind of searched around for some more stuff. Like you said, it was hard to find something that fit in, because there's a lot of crap out there that I didn't realize had been made. So I went back to Lobo and started looking at it a little bit more. And what's funny is, so he was first released in 83, or debuted in 83, I should say. And then he kind of went into limbo because nobody really wanted to use him. He just kind of was a character that DC had. And then in the 90s, in 1990, actually, I think it was, or maybe 91, I can't remember now, he got reintroduced as his own solo character as a joke about, you know, leaning into the trend and making fun of the trend of how the 90s was becoming darker and grittier. And so DC said, let's have this character and just be a complete joke about how people are into this dark, gritty, you know, superhero type world that we're in now. And oddly enough, he became a super popular character and everybody loved him. And so they just kind of ran with it. Like, one of the creators did an interview where he like to this day, he's like, I don't know why people like Lobo, but they do. So we're going to keep going with it. But they did a good job with him in the fact that, I mean, he did have his own solo run, like, I think 60 or so books I saw that he did in a solo run, but they did a good job of using him as a cameo in different stories and different crossovers and stuff. And then also just doing like mini series. Like they did one I was reading about, it's called Lobo Cop, and it's basically RoboCop, but with Lobo.
Nice.
He has one, let me see, I got to find the name of it because it killed me. Paramilitary Christmas Special. In which he's contracted by the Easter Bunny to assassinate Santa Claus.
Awesome.
I mean, so they did stuff like that, and then he just kind of made some appearances here and there. And so I think that's what's kept him as a good character, is that they haven't oversaturated him. He's not like a, you know, like a Batman that has 12,000 different series yeah. about him that gets rebooted every 6 months, and
yep.
they just, every now and then, they're like, we need somebody who's going to cause extreme amounts of chaos and you don't know if he's a good guy or a bad guy, and they're like, oh, Lobo, okay, here you go. He's had a few other media appearances. He was you pointed out in the Stringly, he was in the Superman animated series,
yeah,
but of course it's a kid show, so yeah. they, you know, really tamed him down. I mean, Lobo's whole MO is that he just likes to destroy and kill and, you know, be drunk and smoke cigars, and they're like, maybe not on a Saturday morning cartoon. So
yeah, probably not.
He was still crazy and, you know, Lobo-ish, but he just didn't kill anybody. He had his hook, he just used it to actually like hook onto things and swing around and stuff like that. His first live action debut, which I actually saw this and it was freaking cool if you ask me, there was a show called Krypton that was like an extreme origin story of Superman.
Yeah.
And like at the end of the second season, I think he popped into an episode, and they introduced him that way, but he didn't last long. The show didn't last long. Shortly after that, it got canceled, which sucked because they were going to have a spinoff show of just Lobo based off of the character that was in Krypton. But since Krypton got canceled, then that all those dominoes fell and he never got the show. There's been a few different ideas for movies. Guy Ritchie was going to do a movie. A Lobo movie.
Come on.
And he was all in, you know, ready to go. He wanted it. He was working on it, you know, ready to hammer it out. But the studio wanted to keep it a PG-13 rating. And Guy Ritchie was like, you don't know Lobo, obviously. And they kind of went back and forth to the point where finally Guy Ritchie was just like, I don't want to do this because you're going to make this a bad movie. And so he took himself off the project and went and made the, his sequel or his second Sherlock Holmes movie instead.
So it was before Deadpool.
Yeah. And so then it just kind of, that just kind of, they kind of hung in limbo with the script. They got some more script writers. They got like another director, but then it just eventually fell apart. They could never get the momentum behind it. So he's out there ready to have a movie. And I think when I was looking at it, like I said, I think either a movie, maybe two, but not a whole bunch of movies, or you do like miniseries, TV series, where you take some of these stories, like the paramilitary Christmas special, yes, and you just make that like a 4 or 5 episode TV show, where you turn that miniseries in. Or you could do, as long as you do it correctly, you could do a serial show for maybe a season or two or three. If you did it like the original Marvel series from Netflix, if you kind of had that idea and that creative type team behind it, I think you can make Lobo into a good TV show.
So each episode would be him assassinating or a bounty on somebody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's a mercenary bounty hunter, you know, space biker. So yeah, just kind of almost like the Mandalorian too. Just, you know, you got a villain of the week, you know, this episode, he's hunting down this person. And once he hunts him down, that's the end of the story. We don't need these big conspiracy story arcs where there's the secret shadow people that are running everything and he tries to fight them. No, just some guy paid him to go hunt this person down. So that's what he did. End of issue. End of TV show.
I had no idea, Ben, that this was just somebody finding an old character that they wanted to just lean into the 90s with. That's why he got popular. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. You know, then what's funny is then people, you know, kind of made fun of him by making like, again, more, you know, crazy, super dark and gritty characters, because they're like, oh, look, we're making fun of Lobo. Like, there's even a character called Bolo that was just a complete ripoff of him. Well, not even ripoff. They did it on purpose because they were making fun of Lobo. So like he was even the character that the Bolo character was even like blue, like Lobo is. But I think he's a fun character. I think he, like you said, you can make a great, I think, TV series and or couple movie series out of him.
He's kind of like the Deadpool of DC Comics. He's kind of the slapstick,
a little bit, yeah,
type, you know, mercenary killer. Yeah. You know, he's kind of like that. I agree. I think a TV show or maybe one or two movies would be plenty. I don't know that you need to drag it out too much more than that. I think he was right in Justice League, in the Justice League animated movie or animated cartoon show. I don't know if you remember that, in early 2000s. I think he was.
Yeah, he might have made an appearance in there too. But I mean, you run the risk of, if you make it too long, you run the risk of them trying to turn him into a sympathetic character. And this guy, you don't want to do that. Like, or not sympathetic, but I guess like softening him up to where, you know, like, I could see them doing something dumb, like he finds, you know, a younger character and then becomes the father figure. And it's like, no, that's not Lobo. He's got a miniseries where he doesn't take on kids. He actually kills them. So, yeah.
This would definitely have to be a hard R if they made a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And but I think if done well, it could be awesome.
There's no need for backstory. Just jump right in. He's a biker, space biker. This is what he does. And just get into it.
Yep.
Yeah, he's an alien mercenary. That's all you need to know. And he kills people for money.
Yeah, I mean, his parents getting killed in some cosmic alley.
Right. I mean, if you're going to do any kind of backstory on him, it's just, you just do it through dialogue. You know, you just have some character say some throwaway line, you know, like, oh, who is this guy? Oh, he's from this planet. He's the last of his kind. And now he's a bounty hunter. Cool. Now we know who he is. We don't need anything else.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I agree. But it's funny that you're talking about backstory, Al, that 20 years ago, or even like with the original Spider-Man movies, the Tobey Maguire, we spent about a fourth of the movie just on the origin. Now it's just a 13-second clip of him getting bit by a spider, you know?
Right.
We don't need the backstory.
I mean, like, okay, the first Spider-Man movie, the Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire one, it was... Spider-Man hadn't been mainstream in TV or movies for a minute. I mean, he had the animated show, you know, fans knew it, but the average person on the street probably didn't know it and it made sense. But once you do that once, I think in any movie or TV show, then you're done.
Like, right.
Especially now, like you said, everybody knows who Spider-Man is. Everybody knows his origin story. But you're right. Back in, you know, 99 or whenever those came out, 2003, or I don't remember. But yeah, you're right. People, even your mom knew who Spider-Man was. They knew the name, but they may not know, well, how did he become Spider-Man?
Well, we touched on this too, Al, last night when we're just kind of BSing around this stuff, that it's okay if you show it in the first movie. But like some of these movies, and even I think those Sam Raimi Spider-Mans did it, where like you showed it in the first movie, and then in the first like maybe 5 minutes of the second movie, like you recap it again. It's like, no, the people watching this movie saw the first one, or they're fans of the character. So I don't need three movies, all of which start with them with some way of showing or telling me that he was bitten by a spider. Like, I get it. I don't need to see that again.
It depends what you're going for in your movie, right? If you want your character to be sympathetic or relatable, you want to show that. You know, with Peter Parker, it's important if you want him to relate to the audience to show that he's just another kid. He's just another schmuck. He lost his parents. He's living with his aunt and uncle. It's great to build up the story. That's fine. Same with, you know, even Deadpool did a bit of a, you know, sappy, like, hey, let's make him relatable. So he's not just some insufferable jerk that's killing everybody. You have to give that backstory a little bit, depending on,
right.
Also depends on the story you want to tell. Cause with Deadpool, you had the love interest and why would this woman ever want anything to do with him? Because come on. So you needed that. But then you take another movie like the Judge Dredd movie, the good one with Carl Urban. There's no backstory. He's a cop. He's in the city. He goes to this tower. That's it. You don't need a backstory for Judge Dredd. You don't need to see him going through the police academy or any of that, because that's not right. the kind of story they're telling.
I thought the good Judge Dredd was with Stallone, Al.
Nope. No, sir.
Just kidding.
No.
So with Lobo, we don't need, like you said, we don't need a sappy backstory. No, because
he goes up and just gets into it. That's
his cold killer. That's it. You mentioned first appearance, Ben, of Lobo is Omega Man number 3, which was cover price was only $1. Now it's worth $85. So 85 times increase, Ben.
You see that? You see that?
Yeah. And it only took 40 years.
Again, we're not gonna see Lee caught on to the marketing. You don't mention the timeline. Since its initial printing, its value has increased 85 times its initial value. See how that makes it sound so much better?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what. Lee,
look at the. It's fun to compare the new Lobo versus what Lobo originally looked like.
Yeah, I can't really blow it up here, but man, he looks way different. Oh, here, maybe I can zoom in.
Oh yeah,
look at that. Like the purple hair. So half of him is purple, half of him is just flesh color. Looks like the Joker. He's got a white face, purple hair.
Yeah,
it looks like a Kiss reject.
Yeah, right? There you go.
This is the keyboardist for Kiss before they realized they didn't need a keyboardist.
Listen, it's still better makeup than what Peter Chris had.
Is it?
Yeah.
He's a cat. Come on.
Yeah.
He's the cat man.
So, yeah, they've definitely made some changes. But that's a fascinating backstory, though, that they – let's go find some obscure character. Hey, there's this one guy we introduced in Omega Men and never used him again. You know, it's been 7 years, 8 years, whatever it was. What about him?
Yeah.
Who comes up with this stuff?
And they just totally leaned into the 90s, you know, being, you know, gritty and dark, because they, like, you know, they bulked him up. In the Omega Man, he had muscles because he's a super, or in a comic book, but when he debuted, you know, they made him huge and ridiculously bulked up. They changed his look. They got rid of, they gave him, you know, long hair, dreadlocks, red eyes, turned him bluish white. Which is always funny, because there's some iterations of him where he's got like more blue skin and some where he's more white. So I guess they always describe him as a white person, like white humanoid. But then when you see the picture, it's like, but he's kind of blue.
Yeah, he is. He is kind of blue. I could look at some of these. Yeah, they gave him spikes on his shoulders or his biceps on some of these. So
there was a, I know there was a lot of talk a couple of years ago I think around the time the Aquaman movie came out, there was kind of an online push in forums to get a Lobo movie with Jason Momoa.
That would be good. Actually, he'd be perfect.
Yeah.
I could see that. There was also a little bit of a rumbling to have The Rock be Lobo, but then apparently he decided, or they signed him on to do Black Adam instead.
And destroy the franchise before it ever got started.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people bring this up, and it's a very, very good point. When you put The Rock in the movie, it doesn't matter who he's playing. It's The Rock.
Right.
He's playing himself.
Right.
You know, when he's in Jumanji, it's like, hey, it's The Rock in a jungle. You put him in Black Adam, it's like, hey, it's The Rock dressed as Black Adam. You put him in Fast and Furious, it's like, hey, it's The Rock driving fast cars. It's you want to talk about somebody who doesn't, you know, have much depth and always plays the same person. It's
sure.
The Rock. That's what he does. He's just himself.
I mean, and good for him, man. He's done great things by just being The Rock.
Right? I mean, he's making money at it, but
making a ton of money. All right, Al, what do you got for us?
Savage Dragon. Not gonna tease around it or anything. No, it's Savage Dragon. I think he's long overdue for any kind of quality adaptation. He debuted in, I think, 91 as one of the original Image comics from Eric Larson, who's still writing and illustrating the book by himself. He's going to break the record because it's over 300 issues by a single creator. Single hand is the friend for any independent comic book or any comic book, really.
Geek Cerebus would be the other one.
Yep, Dave Sim Cerebus. Spawn kind of broke the record because it surpassed 300 issues. And so Todd McFarlane, of course, laid claim to being the record holder because he's Todd McFarlane and he's, you know, bombastic like that. But he did not draw. He did not illustrate Spawn the entire time. I think he lasted like 10 issues. So when Eric Larson gets over 300, he'll be the true record holder for the longest single created. Anyway, he's a fun, bombastic, exciting character. And you can do, there's a lot of versatility there. There's a lot of wacky, wild looking villains. The book has never taken itself too seriously. And as far as a backstory, unless Eric Larson did something, you know, did more, since I haven't read every issue, but there was really no backstory. He woke up in, you know, like the aftermath of something in a fire. He's a dragon and he has amnesia. So he becomes a cop. That's it. There's no backstory. We don't have, you know, his parents getting killed or anything. Right.
That's amazing.
It makes it incredibly versatile. You can do whatever.
I'm sure there's been some, obviously in 300 issues, they've delved into his background. And
so, well, actually, he died. The original dragon from the first miniseries and when the book started, that dragon's dead. And so it's been ongoing. So, you know, for 30 years now, so it's 30 years of the story. He got old, died, but he did have a kid. And so now, if you go and pick up an issue of Savage Dragon now, you're looking at Savage Dragon's kid and his kids, because he's had a family and stuff. And it's all like in real time. Yeah.
So it is like Cerebus, where it's real time. Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, that's how he's been able to keep it fresh and keep things, you know, progressing instead of just the same character doing the same stuff over and over again. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was his son that they'd kind of moved to. Okay. Well, Al, would this be a TV series or movie, or what do you think would be best?
I think a movie would be best. Short and sweet, you know, hour and a half. Again, you don't have to have any backstory. You just, you know, he's a cop. He's in Chicago. And here's these crazy bad guys that come in with some crazy plot, and he has to stop them in fun and exciting and dramatic ways.
I don't know. With him being a cop, I mean, you could make this a TV series.
You could.
Because, I mean, you could go, I mean, it's been around for 30 years, too. You could go the Law and Order route, you know?
Right.
You could make it a procedural. Him and you know, Jerry Orbach are catching murderers in Chicago.
Yeah, team them up with Ice-T. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do maybe a one or two season, you know, 8-10 episodes type thing, I guess.
Like, oh, you absolutely could. And there's obviously more than enough source material.
Oh yeah.
You could get you have a lot of content just waiting right there. You could do a TV show. It would though, it would have to be a hard R. You can't do PG-13.
Oh, that's true.
That's gonna suck a lot of the fun out of it. Because there is a lot of gory violence and, you know, popping heads and things like that. Like it's not for the
adult humor and
very much adult humor.
Didn't they have a cartoon, Al?
It did. It was in the late 90s, like 95, 96, maybe even later than that, but it was part of the USA Network animation block. And it was Savage Dragon, Street Fighter, I think Mortal Kombat, and Wildcats, the other Image Comics adaptation. And it lasted, the Savage Dragon cartoon, I think it was like 22, 24 episodes, something like that. But it lasted two seasons. But again, part of the problem was it was PG and toned down. And I think that, you know, the main audience at that time was in, you know, the people who made Savage Dragon the huge success that it was were all beyond cartoon age at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were all adults by that time.
Yeah. I was 13 when it came out, when the comic book came out and hooked me, but I was in college when the cartoon came out, and I had better things to do than watch Savage Dragon cartoons when I was in college. So,
yeah.
Well, after you watch the cartoon, you realize everybody had better things to do than watch that cartoon.
Right. And especially the PG, you know, or even G rated Savage Dragon cartoon. The animation wasn't great. It wasn't, you know.
Right. Well, because that was every studio was trying to kind of like what they're doing now with movies, though, and TV. At that, everybody had superheroes. Like Fox Animation had X-Men and a couple other ones. Warner Brothers had Batman and Superman. And then USA tried to jump on with apparently all the independent stuff because, you know, I don't know why. But it would have made sense because being on USA, it's a cable network. They could have gone deeper and harder with it, but
they could.
They're trying to compete with, like, hey, these guys have Saturday morning cartoons now, so do we. And it's like, but you picked like those four you named off: Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, Wildcats, Savage Dragon. None of those are kid friendly content origins.
No. Well, and the again the audience that you're going for, kids, Savage Dragon and Wildcats. Like Wildcats, I think had already been through like three iterations by then. It was not a great comic book,
right?
Storytelling goes, and it struggled. But in 91-92, when Image took the world by storm, they said, hey, this would make a great cartoon. We can really make a lot of money off this because look at how hot it is. This is the biggest selling books in the world, and it's getting all this news attention.
They jump
on the lap of, you know, Eric Larson or whoever, and say, we're going to do this. And they go, okay, well, as long as it takes to get animation, you got to get the production up and running, you got to get the stories, and so by the time it comes out in 95, it's not quite the same audience now. Like it took too long.
Yeah, but they're right, they probably still made a ton of money off of it in those two seasons.
Something. Yeah, I know Eric Larson has, people have asked him, he's very active on social media, and people have come out and asked him like, hey, how come you don't do it again, or, you know, whatever happened to it. And he's like, he's like, I have nothing to do with it. The people that had the money, you know, are the ones that control it. And he's like, he's like, if it's up to me, I'd rather just sit and make the book. I don't care enough about that stuff.
Man, you'd have to care about a comic book if you're going to do it for 300 issues. So
yeah,
that's crazy.
But yeah, as far as like any adaptations, he's like, I'm good. I don't need it.
I'm sure at the time, if they got Wildcats, that was Jim Lee's. I'm wondering if Jim Lee said, hey, I'm making an animated deal over here with USA. They need something else. Do you want to, what about Savage Dragon? He's probably just like, probably, sure.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure they had like the same representation.
Yeah.
That hooked him up, and it's like, okay. So, but yeah, like, but that was also one of those things too, where all the people with the money come in, and Eric Larson and Jim Lee, like those guys are pushed to the side. Because, you know, you don't get any say, you don't get the control of it. You sold the name, you sold the character, the likeness or whatever. That's where your involvement ends.
Yep.
You just go take your check to the bank. That's all you do. Yep. And at the time, maybe he's like, I needed the money. So, you know, whatever. I'll just do it.
I don't know. I don't think he needed the money. I think it was just they're going to dump money on him and, you know, kind of getting caught up in the wave of like, hey, let's see how big this can get. Like, okay.
If you wanted to do another animated, this would have been better maybe on HBO, like the Spawn cartoon.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, animated would be great just because of how wacky and zany some of the characters are. I mean, even if you do a movie, if you're getting into some of the villains and stuff, there's going to be a lot of CGI, but there's so much potential in animation. Yeah. You can get away with a lot of cool stuff.
That's true. I forgot to mention that on budgets on some of this. If you're going to do like Savage Dragon or the Batman versus Predator or Lobo, even, you know, would you do, you'd have to do a lot of CGI. I don't know if you could do practical effects on a lot of those.
Right.
Yes. This is amazing. Eric Larson, 300, almost not 300 yet, but he's getting there. So he did. See, before he went to Image, he was doing Spider-Man, wasn't he?
Yeah. He followed McFarlane's run on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
When McFarlane went off to do Adjectiveless Spider-Man, that's when Eric Larson came on to Amazing.
So he did some Doom Patrol.
He really blew up with Amazing Spider-Man.
It's mainly Savage Dragon. You look at his portfolio, that was kind of his biggest thing, and by far.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, he said in interviews, because all the other guys, you know, they've all gone on to do other stuff and bounce back and forth to Marvel and DC and stuff. And he's just like, no, I want to make Savage Dragon. I'm making Savage Dragon. And he still has he has roles at Image Comics.
Yeah.
You know, so he's still involved in the actual company.
The business. Yeah. He's got some C-level. Yeah. I don't know what he is.
But that's all he wants to do. So he's doing it.
Dedicated to his craft. I'll give him that. All right. So Savage Dragon number one came out in July of 92. Cover price was $1.95. Current value, $5. So more than doubled the value.
See?
Look at that.
That cover that you're looking at there, that's actually the mini series. There was a 4-issue mini series.
Oh, okay.
And then he started the ongoing. So the one image where it's a close-up of Dragon's face all bloodied up, that's issue one of the ongoing.
Okay. You're right. Let me see. So I assume the miniseries would be the most valuable because it's the first appearance of it. But okay. Oh, volume two. Okay, so that's probably what this is.
Yeah.
Because volume one was they had zeros. They had one half. Issue one half. I remember they were doing that sort of thing where they were doing half issues. There we go. So $1.95, $5. So still the same value.
Yeah. Okay.
Man, they had a lot of issues out there. That's why this stuff is 30 years later. It's just barely doubling in value.
They're printing a million copies.
Oh, easily.
But $5 and you have 300 issues.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Because let's spin this.
Because I bet if you go into Krypton or Legends or any of the comic book shops where you may be at to sell your collection and you walk in with a long box full of Image books, they're going to jump on that. Yeah. They're not going to let that opportunity walk out of their store because they don't get, Savage Dragon and
Wildcats,
you know, those types of Image books just walking in their door every day. So
you probably have a big trash bag next to the desk there. Here they go. That's where those go.
Yeah. They don't even put them in the 50 cent box. They just put these in the burn pile.
That's how we heat the place in the wintertime. instead of a pile of wood. It's just a pile of Image Comics. So Savage Dragon. Okay, so next one I came up with was X-Men Age of Apocalypse. So this was a comic book back in 1995 that came out for Marvel Comics, of course. And I know we've done X-Men movies, but I think this is a good spin on an actually decent alternative timeline storyline. I've read the X of Swords, the one they did recently. I couldn't get into the new stuff. I tried the Krakoa stuff they've done, but this one, I remember I read it when it came out, of course, but went back and looked at some of it. It's actually pretty darn good. The storyline, the art is really good. This one is 34 issues, though. I didn't realize it was that big. This was a massive crossover in 1995.
Over what, four books? I think there were four different titles that the story ran through.
Yes, and then you had a four issue with Fantastic Four that they did, and some other ancillary stuff. So the core, though, you're right, the core was just X titles that they did. So the basic synopsis is Legion, who is Professor Xavier's son, travels back in time to kill Magneto to prevent the whole mutant, you know, with Magneto stirring the pot there with the mutants. But Xavier steps in front of the bullet or whatever, and he accidentally kills Xavier, which changes the timeline where Apocalypse is in control of the world. This one, I didn't realize the writers, Mark Waid is in this. He's a writer, Scott Lobdell, Fabian Nizia, John Francis, Warren Ellis. Warren Ellis was a writer on this. Then some of the pencilers, we talked about the Kubert. So we got Adam Kubert here and Andy. But do those guys always work together, Al?
No, the Kubert boys?
Yeah.
I mean, they've both been around, but they bounce around quite a bit between Marvel and DC. And yeah, because they're both pencilers, so they each do their own books.
Seem to always see their names together, though. Hey, I'm going over to DC for 6 months. I got a great deal. Maybe I should come along.
Right.
Let's see who else the names here. Daniel Salvador, Chris Bachalo. I think he's how you pronounce his last name.
Yeah, Bachalo.
Yeah. Joe Maduria. He's done a lot of X stuff.
He did, yeah. Well, he got, he took over after the Kuberts and after Jim Lee left Uncanny X-Men, they brought in John Romita Jr. For a while. And then after John Romita Jr., then Joe Madureira came on. That's when he was like 20 and he took over on Uncanny X-Men. That's when, and he was on it when this, when Age of Apocalypse started. He did a lot of he did a lot of the character designs, all the redesigns. That was him.
Oh, that was all him, huh? Yeah. Okay. The art on this is actually pretty darn good for the late, in my opinion, the new designs. Some of these, when you do especially alternate timelines, and maybe back then we didn't see a lot of them. I guess we did a little bit with DC Comics doing their Elseworlds and the What Ifs on the Marvel side. You got to see some alternate stuff, but this one was kind of the first big one that I thought was interesting. Now I was an X fan, so I was obviously a little biased on some of this, but
right.
It was really cool what they did with some of the characters, where the heroes in the original timeline were villains and some of the villains were the heroes, and how they changed some of them. But just a vast role of, I mean, they rolled in everybody. I was trying to find the list of some of these, but they
Can I just
really
point this out real quick. Looking at the screen here, the colors, whoever did the colors for the Generation Next books really dropped the ball, because looking at it now, like, they don't pop. It's dark and muddy, and it really did a disservice to the Chris Bachalo artwork.
Yeah, let me pull up one of these here. Yeah,
the other ones are bright and colorful, and they read from a distance, but that, you got to really zoom in to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's just a red blob on the screen.
So maybe too busy? Too much?
It's way too muddy. They're trying to get too cute with all the gradients and stuff.
Huh.
It's just, it doesn't read well.
Yeah, so if you compare, say, this Generation Next with Colossus here, and then over here with Magneto.
Yeah, Magneto's jumping out at you.
You're right. Look, the backgrounds are always dark Yeah, you're right. Instead of white. So
the one with Magneto, and even at the top, the one that had Wolverine, they did a good job with, I mean, there's color on the background there, but it's the space where there's nobody there, where you either have no color or very light color. So then the characters pop out, whereas like the Generation Next, the backgrounds and everything just kind of make it all one.
Yeah. There's no contrast.
Yeah.
His cover was Chris Bachalo. This Generation Next.
So that was Generation X or whatever it was.
Yeah, Generation Next.
He was the regular artist on that at that time.
That's a good observation there, Al, on the and Ben on the just the colors. But you're right. When you compare them next to each other, they're just darker and busier. Well, not necessarily busier, because some of these have a lot of characters on the front, but. It just, you're right, the colors aren't right, or the size, maybe the proportions are bad, but on these Generation Next, several of them have Colossus, maybe they're trying to show his size, I don't know.
I think they're just doing too much with the gradients, it's just, they're not, you know, like, I don't know, I'll get off the topic, but it's, they're doing too much with the gradients, just muddying it up, anyway.
Yeah.
So they had... They took all your X titles and kind of redid them a little bit. So you had Gambit and the Externals. Generation Next was supposed to be the younger X-Men. Astonishing X-Men, Amazing X-Men, Factor X instead of X-Factor, the Outcast. I mean, they just had a whole slew of their characters that they took and kind of gender swapped them, or just not gender swapped, but just kind of moved them around a little bit. You had the Human High Council, which is the people obviously fighting against Apocalypse. You had the Sentinels, protected the humans from Apocalypse's mutants. You had, some deceased men. Frank Castle was dead, so the Punisher, Peter Parker, T'Challa from Black Panther was dead. Namor was dead because Apocalypse had taken over the... Wakanda and Atlantis. You had, there was a good one I thought was kind of, Jamie Madrix. He was the cult leader of the Madre. It was kind of the religious center. So all of his duplicates were the priests of the Madre, which was kind of a cool idea, I thought.
That's clever. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's see. You had the Hellions, which was a team of mutants. Use their powers to become the agent. The Hounds, which was Sabretooth, Wildchild, Calibane, and Wolverine was part of the Hounds. So, yeah.
So you'd have to do a series with this, just because the scope of it.
This would definitely have to be a TV series for sure. I think you could do 35, 45 minutes each on each episode. This is where, do you think... You would probably have to have some backstory episodes for some of your main characters, you think?
Sure. I mean, well, it depends on what the character, you know, what's the backstory bring into the overall story?
Well, see, here's where the dilemma would be. So if you don't know anything about X-Men, you're not going to watch this anyway, I suppose. But what if you do know a little bit about the X-Men, but these are kind of different versions of them. Do you want to explain their original X background, or do you want to explain them where they are now? You know, how
only,
or,
only if it's bringing any, if it's relevant and it's necessary for the story. Overarching story.
Okay.
Because I think you could get by with the first half of like the first episode. You know, the first episode is going to be introducing all the characters and setting up the world. That's where you've got your normal X-Men, the normal timeline running around doing stuff. And that's where then, you know, Professor X, the time traveling, and Professor X gets shot. And at the end of it, look at this new world we're in now. And then you're off and running. From there, if you're going to bring in Blink's backstory or Wolverine's backstory, you can't do it just for the sake of having a backstory.
Sure. Yeah.
It has to tie into the overall narrative.
As you're going through the narrative here, and the general narrative is Magneto is the leader of the mutants, and they're trying to take out Apocalypse, and Rogue is there, and then all these other characters. Okay, so, yeah. I think you'd have to do at least probably two seasons, maybe three seasons, total of maybe 40 to 50 episodes. Again, you're going to deal with budget here because you're going to have a lot of CGI and a lot of different sets, because a lot of this story takes place of over, you know, different areas. Sometimes you're in Manhattan, sometimes you're in Europe, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do it right, you would have to do, you know, prestige TV, like Game of Thrones style. Otherwise, just animate it. Just do an animation.
Yeah.
And
go.
Yeah, definitely.
That's true. Okay. So if you don't have the budget for live, let's just look at animation.
Yeah.
But I think this would make a good story, a good streaming service. It's a good story, and it's contained. This isn't going to go on for 9 seasons. This would probably be 2 or 3 seasons, and we're done. We're just going to tell the story. Xavier gets shot, starts a new timeline, and then in the end, they eventually take out Apocalypse. Everything goes back to normal.
Yep.
So I found this one, Al and Ben. Look at the Apocalypse, how they look at those shoulders.
That's what you're focusing on in this? That is a weird costume choice, man.
No, I know. That's what I thought. I was like, this is bizarre. No, look at the waist.
What you don't understand, Al, is that is an extreme tactical choice on Apocalypse's end to wear the linebacker pads and Speedo. The reason that you'd want to dress like, I don't know. It does look weird.
The confusing thing is because Apocalypse has blue skin. So right. Is he wearing like a just extremely skin tight blue suit there to keep everything contained, but still be able to see like every muscle, or is he just nude with like a red cod piece on?
I think he is the bad guy from Mad Max that had the hockey mask.
Humongoid, was it?
Humongous
or whatever. I think he's going that route where I think he's got shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And it looked like maybe a dickie underneath there because he's got the red collar. And then I think he's wearing maybe pants, or like I said, he's just wearing like a red Speedo with some red body paint for the squares on his thighs.
It's very fetishistic.
I saw this. I'm like, wow. I think I remember seeing it originally, but I was like, I gotta show the guys this one.
Yeah. That's not a costume choice that if I were going to have a character in a comic book that has a costume like that, it's not going to be my big bad guy unless there's like very comical reasons for it. Like this is not bringing that costume.
Yeah, this is not like, hey, mom, I want this Halloween outfit when Halloween comes around, you know?
No.
Well, he's also got a cape, I just realized. He's wearing a cape, too.
Yeah, he does. He has a cape. And just the proportions are really weird. His arms are, like, massive, and then he's got this 12-inch waist. I don't know. Yeah. That's almost Rob Liefeld-ish in some ways.
Right? And then his calves and his feet are huge.
Yeah, yeah. Just insane. But strange outfits aside, I think this one would be a fun miniseries. I mean, the movies that we've gotten from the X-Men lately have been mediocre at best, but I think this storyline could be pretty decent, in my opinion.
There's a lot of potential there. There's great visuals, good characters, and I think it would be a lot of fun to see it play out. And I don't think that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily need to know who the X-Men are or who the characters are, because once they're in this landscape, they all have transformed, you know, not only physically, but also mentally. So you're introducing all new characters, even though they've got Wolverine's claws or Colossus's metal, they're different characters and you're introducing them anew. And I think it gives you a lot of freedom to take that and run with it, where you don't need to do, you don't need the audience to know who they were or who they represent.
Yeah, I think if you had to, like you said, to cover the casual fan or even the actual X-Men fan, I think if, like Al said, in the first season, first even episode, you could just do a quick, again, almost not necessarily throwaway, but you just introduce, you know, there's one episode, here's the X-Men, and then by the end of that episode, you know, Legion's come back and screwed up the timeline. So then the whole rest of the series is, so then that explains. So like I said, as the casual X-Men fan, I know who Wolverine is, but then when I come in to watch this, it's like, well, that's not Wolverine. It's like, well, it explained. This is a different timeline, different universe, whatever. So I think that's the only backstory you need, is to explain why they're different.
Lee, do you remember who in the Age of Apocalypse timeline, if any, know that they're in the wrong timeline, that things are wrong?
Bishop. Bishop's the one that didn't get affected by the timeline. That's it.
Right.
So he would be the one. He might be kind of your narrator character, possibly.
Sure. Yeah, he's the one pulling the needle, pulling the thread through it all.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would actually be pretty good, because you got this one guy that knows this is all wrong, and so he's trying to fix it to get it back to the way it was.
Right.
Then also too, Ben, you touched on a little bit. You can probably hit both people that don't know anything about X-Men or very little, but then you also have the more of the diehard fans that know a little bit about the original. Like, but this is a new set of characters, so to speak. So you can kind of maybe hit right. both fans, but the casual fan and the hardcore fan.
Yeah. And yeah. And like Al said, you don't have to go too deep into explaining what's going on, other than, you know, maybe an episode ish of, hey, timelines are different. Timelines are weird now. So that way, like I said, if I'm a fan and I know these characters, but then I come into it, I'm like, well, why is Wolverine look like that? Why is this person that's not Colossus have Colossus powers? Well, I watched the first episode and they explained it's a new timeline. So it's like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yep.
So,
and all the materials here. So just like everything we've talked about, you have to go through it and turn it into a screenplay, obviously. So you'd have to figure out, what am I going to keep? What am I not going to keep? But
yeah,
you know, 80 to 90%,
you can trim a lot of fat.
Yeah. 80 to 90% of what you need's here. You don't really need to do a whole lot of extra work. So other than, you know, then you got casting, I get it, but
if it's X-Men on the screen, that means that they're going to have to turn it into the Dark Phoenix saga and introduce a bunch of characters that didn't exist in the story that they're telling, and then just completely butcher it and distort everybody's abilities.
That's true. Okay. Yeah. I've been corrected. They had the source material right in front of them. Right in front of them. Yeah. And they still messed it up. Okay. So the studio execs, the moral of the story is here, studio execs can screw up a one-man parade.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we've given our best shot, guys. We've told Disney and everybody that here it is. We laid it out for them. They just have to take it up.
Yep. That's right. And then not pay us for it and claim that this never happened. And
yeah, there you go. Right. All right.
Well, Kevin Feige in an interview saying, I never at all ever heard these ideas from a podcast ever.
Yeah. Al Garrison, who's that?
This was all me.
This is all me. I don't know who Al Garrison is. Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, that's all I got, guys. So go to covertnerd.net. For all the information on this episode and previous episodes, I'll put a link in there for the Omug guys too. So keep on the lookout for the next Lenny Vernon expanded universe. Is that what you're going to have underneath the next title?
I think so.
Expanded.
Yeah, come find us at Omaha Comic Con or O-Comic Fest or whatever it's called. If you're in the eastern Nebraska, western Iowa area, coming up in July.
All right.
You can find us and get our books.
And yeah, then yeah. You guys got to totally lean into 90s and get a card set, a Lenny Vernon card set. So,
see, we've actually, listen, that idea has come up. It's been mentioned and maybe even been researched a little bit.
That's not too far off a possibility.
Because all Rob Liefeld did was just take some panels from Youngblood and put them onto cards.
Yep. Yeah.
Wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, don't reinvent the wheel.
And then, of course, the fans have been clamoring for the Al Garrison fan club, because Rob Liefeld had a fan club. So,
right?
Yeah, it's a work in progress, right?
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
Al will get his assistant to work on that.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Yeah, we're gonna get the promotions team working on that right now.
Yeah,
we're still taking applications, so you know, just getting all that sussed out.
Yes. All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening. And until next time, nerd it up. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.